We're rolling on the Union Working podcast at Southpaw Studios and ASG Casting.
Union Working is a grassroots organization of film, television, and commercial performers of SAG-AFTRA.
We are dedicated to solutions, ideas, and creating a union that works for all of us. So we hope you will enjoy our informative, entertaining, and at times irreverent podcast about the challenges facing the modern-day union actor.
We support a membership-driven membership model because
We are the union.
People, hello.
I am Kevin E. West, one of the podcasting UW Corps, and to my right is my man Mike Nelson. Mike, say hi.
Hi, everybody.
And we have with us two fabulous guests today, one of whom is the executive producer of Top 5 Live flagship daily show for Awesomeness TV, the head of creative for Life of Dad, and the man himself has done over 100 commercials, and that would be Brent Popolizio.
Hey-o!
Popolizio.
Look, we need a
applause.
Yeah.
I wrote that myself. Is that nice? Did I do a good job?
I hope I pulled that off for you well enough.
You did.
And then,
of course,
next to Brent over here, we have Mr. Nevin Milan, who has done commercial production for Honda and Pro Flowers and Dole and Natural Light Beer, and you got several indie films, and you got a comedy pilot coming up. Nevin, are you here this time?
I'm here.
Another clap. Yay. Round of applause.
Outstanding. We haven't actually lost you yet, but anything's possible at this point.
Ran down his list a lot faster than mine because there was a lot more to get through. So it's nice. I like to kind of like
that. Well, it's 100 commercials is a nice round figure.
That's good. That make it easy.
And we are going to be covering some stuff today with regards to low-budget digital waiver contracts and commercials, but also mixing in a lot of influencer content, which because we now actually have some signatories related to influencers and just where we're all headed, and eventually we'll all just have the middle name Quibi. So
short and fast. Give it to me quick.
The rest of life.
Yeah.
I have a quick opening question for both of you guys, and I'm hoping I get somewhat severely different answers. Brent, what do you think the greatest and worst things about the digital world are for actors and producers?
I think the greatest part of the digital world is that people have the freedom to kind of create their own universe, especially artists, performers. That's really what it's all about. They're creating their own universe. And I would even go so far as to say, to me, it's really the future of what content is going to be. I think the studios and networks are going to try harder and harder to align themselves with great performers. Like Kevin Hart is a great example of someone who is taking his content and shaping it into a whole network and a whole studio system of, you want to see comedy? Kevin Hart knows the comedy, not just Kevin Hart's comedy, but somebody else, this guy's comedy and this girl's comedy and this woman's comedy. So I think that's the best part. The worst part is the digital world has accepted a life of peanuts, which is bizarre, right? So because it's do it yourself, they're willing to do everything themselves. They don't know how to produce. They don't know how to hire. They don't know how to pay people properly. They don't know how to produce anything. And so you get this, you have this whole universe of people who just don't understand a business that already has quality regulations all surrounding it, and they don't know how to do it.
Right. Outstanding. Nevin, from a commercial production standpoint, do you have a couple of wrinkles on that?
Well, you know, I don't know if you're going to get severely different answers, but, you know, like you said, I think the content creation is fantastic, especially for as an actor myself and, you know, as someone who writes and creates stuff that for me to act in and also my friends and whatnot. It's fantastic, the digital world. I mean, it you can put stuff out there like you couldn't before 10, 15 years ago even, you know? But when it comes to commercial production and actors and you know, being an actor that's in a unique spot, having produced and been in those rooms when you're, you know, they're all doing non-union this, non-union that. They all want to go non-union for everything because it's cheaper and it's less of a pain in the ass and all these other excuses that they give. Now you've got this digital influencer world, and well, I've got this person who's got, you know, 1 million followers on whatever, and why do I need to hire so-and-so union guy when I can get this person who can get the word out in the same way, and they're not union, and I have to deal with all that other stuff, and I can pay them, like you said, peanuts. And so there's a lot of challenges from that aspect, like trying to figure out what is the solution to monetize this in a way with the union and everyone is happy, and how do you track the commercials and all these kind of techie, you know, bumps in the road that, you know, we got to figure that out.
Can right, I say, right, can right, I say right. this?
Sure, Brent.
So it's right along this. It's kind of a weird, long story. I'll try to make it really short. But
is Mike in the weird, long story?
So I'm managing people right now. I'm mentoring influencers right as we speak and having a conversation this morning with a guy who, I'm not going to mention who it is, but he's a really big influencer. He's got a new show coming out on a DIY network on like a, you know, like a like Food Network type thing. Cute, big influencer, got now to the cable network side. Now he's dealing with, but because he's come from this world, he's dealing with three brands that want to work with him and create contracts with him. He's dealing with the cable network that is trying to tell him what he can do and he can't do for brands. And he doesn't know how much to charge the brands for his influencer work. And he also doesn't know how to produce the stuff on his own. It's like the beginning of television. It's like we're back 100 years ago. I'm not kidding. It's like this kid is coming to me and going like, how does this work? And I'm going, oh man, this is how it works. Here's how it works. Like I'm gonna explain to you how it works. And he's like, oh, but I can't put all those things into place. I was like, no, that's why it's taken like 100 years for us to get here with contracts and producers and directors and all of these different people who are in place to help this process go smoothly and fairly. And I don't blame him. I certainly blame, it's almost like we've broken the building apart and now the client is just running around like they're so giddy they can't even believe it. They're like,
it's like a free market for them. Oh my God, I can get this guy, maybe I get this many eyeballs on my thing, and oh my, I have to deal with that union stuff and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
It's the wild west.
The wild west, and so it's gonna form itself because these people are gonna start. He's gonna start to get pissed off. He's gonna realize eventually he's getting hoodwinked, and he's going to get pissed off. But anyway,
that's an interesting
full
point
diatribe. But
of just,
well, it's that double edged sword. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, I can get more work because I'm doing this non union, and there's no union, and none of that stuff. But then it's like, well, now I'm getting screwed.
So exploitation.
Now I don't have anyone going to bat for me. How am I going to do this? You know? So there needs to be a cohesive conversation and put this all together.
And he doesn't. And the guy doesn't know. It's not his fault. Like, he hasn't been in this world, so he's new.
Right, see, that sounds like the worst to me. The worst part is that you have people who've developed an audience. You know, you go back to Procter & Gamble, you go back to Johnson & Johnson, and the audience was there, and then you paid for how much it was worth. But now you can create an audience, and this is all done backwards, and it just sounds to me like it fits into sort of corporate America's scheme in that they do a lot of ready, fire, aim. They just start firing stuff at people before they actually have a game plan. And it leads me to ask, because I'm really curious, because I know some of this is always going to be the latter, but I'm curious about the former, is how much do you guys really think that it's only about the dollars, or how much it is in this decision based on someone who's got 1 million followers or doing a project for Honda or Dole who has money, and it's about the dollars, or we just don't really want to deal with the union?
I think it's mostly about the money. It's mostly finance. Most of their decisions are financial based. And then there is, you know, with the union, you know, the quote unquote pain in the, you know, arse dealing with them.
Oh, you can say ass.
Okay. Pain in the ass dealing with them. but from sitting in those rooms with those people, with the people that make decisions about the money, it's usually like, well, you know, I'd rather pay this guy $300 for this one day instead of dealing with residuals or, you know, a $20,000 buyout or whatever. It's mostly financially based.
I agree. I worked at a production company called Durable Goods as the EP for their branded stuff back in the like 2009 when I moved to LA. And it was sort of when I first started realizing, oh man, these people have money and they just don't want to pay for it. They just don't want to pay for stuff. And so, you know, it was non-union directors and non-union actors. And I would show them commercials and say like, hey, like, this is way better of a commercial than this one over here. And this is because, you know, and all you had to spend was, you know, maybe $30,000, $40,000 more. And you could have all this. And people feel comfortable and will actually dig into the story if they feel comfortable with the shots and the production design and the actors, and it doesn't cost that. I know you have it because I know you have it because you're a publicly traded company and I know you have it.
Yeah, right.
So you got it, but
and you can grease those wheels, you know, if you really want to push them. And well, we need, you know, if it's the day of the shoot and like there's some disaster and like we need an extra $50,000, they're like, fine, here you go.
Yeah,
but I will say this: they chop up their budgets all year. Yep. Right, so they've already parsed out to an account executive or whoever, or the PR company or a marketing firm. They've already parsed out what that marketing budget is for them. Mm-hmm. So then that whole company needs to go out and figure out how they're going to spend this budget and get the most eyeballs they possibly can. So there's also, then you have that PR company that's not just thinking about, well, the budget, but they've got to chase the audience.
Right.
And so that's
ad
the other
placement is another. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what so their goal when you get to boots on the ground is, how many eyeballs can I get on this? Where are the eyeballs? And the eyeballs are all on social media right now. I mean, that's where the eyeballs are. And so the landscape is, I can go out and get those guys cheap. I mean, just go look at Twitch. Go look at how many kids are watching Twitch. It's billions and billions and billions. Right. I'm not saying M's, I'm saying B's. And so it's very easy to grab a kid who's live streaming their video game and be like, hey, man, we're going to pay you like $2,500. You're going to live stream that Fortnite round you're going to play? And the kid's like, what? I get $2,500 while
sure.
I live stream mm-hmm. my video game? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And he's getting 30,000 people to watch him.
Well,
yeah.
That, you know, is a good point you're kind of segueing into. I don't know if you were going to ask about this, but, you know, when it comes to SAG-AFTRA as a union for on-camera talent, you know, where do we draw that line? You know, a kid live streaming a video shouldn't be under a SAG-AFTRA contract. He's not really on-camera talent. He's just a dude with a bunch of followers. Or does SAG-AFTRA create a full-on influencer?
See?
That's what we've been talking about. We be getting there.
Where do you cut off? You know, does someone have to bring something to the table on camera with some kind of talent plus his followers to qualify for that influencer SAG-AFTRA membership? Or, you know,
well, that kind of takes me into where we're heading. Literally, Nevin, it was my next question ish in the sense that, you know, they have the money because we just finished with the Super Bowl and you saw at least five spots during the Super Bowl that must have cost $15 to $20 million to produce.
Least.
I mean, along with the ad buy, we know it costs that. And the low budget digital waiver just went from $50,000 up to $100,000, which is doubling it, you know, and session rates went up. But we know they have the money, but how do we go about? And this is kind of my question, Mike, same to you, is it's Wild West. And what you just said, Brent, is completely correct. So how do you corral the Wild West? Because it brings me back to the conversations that must be happening in those rooms when they start talking about, as we would all think as actors, the casting concept along with the storyboard. And I used to use a phrase about how theatrical would write around the problem if they didn't necessarily like somebody who was on their show. But how much conversation do you see in the creative storyboard side where they're literally trying to storyboard around talent because they want to go non-union so badly? How do you corral that in the Wild West that we're in? How are we going to do it?
Can I just say, just so we're clear, you and I might do kind of different things. So
sure,
I'm working with the influencers mm-hmm. who the clients are coming to and saying, we want your audience. And then the first thing we tell them is, then let us create the spot. So I think you're working in the world of, we need to create a spot that ends up on digital, right?
Well, but basically it's I get, you know, independent contracted by production companies who hire me to produce a commercial that a client came to them or an ad agency came to them to create. Sometimes there's a, you know, oh, can we find an influencer for this?
Okay, got it.
You know, if we're going through
so
the
it's
casting
a little,
process.
So it's a
those
little different.
Those two worlds are colliding a lot, and that's exactly why we're sitting in this room.
They are. So, but I think can you repeat your question again just so I'm clear about the
answer? Well, it's the Wild West. So whether you're creating it, Brent, or whether it's being brought to you, Nevin, and we are all of us are the hopeful people somehow being in a spot, when you start talking about non-union versus at least doing low-budget digital waiver, even for an influencer, and you're the one doing the spot, Brent, how are we going to corral the Wild West at this point because it's cat's so far out of the bag in the last 10 years.
So mm-hmm. the first problem is you've got, I'm going to sound like Elizabeth Warren when I say this, but you've got these major corporations who are not transparent at all. So, and what I mean by that is when I'm working with influencers, and now let's take aside, let's take McDonald's coming to the influencer out of this and just say McDonald's just put a spot inside of the influencer's content. And now the influencer is getting thousands and thousands of dollars because Facebook was allowed to put a commercial inside of that influencer's content, right? It happens on, been happening on YouTube for years and years and years, just started happening on Facebook about a year and a half ago, right? Mm-hmm. There is absolutely zero transparency for that influencer to understand the algorithm that takes place in order for them to get paid by Facebook. So Facebook is making a transparent deal with the client, with McDonald's commercials, to run that commercial. They're getting a whole bucket full of money, and then they're not telling the influencer how they're paying them. They're just sending them a check at the end of the month.
Wow.
Saying, "Hey, here you go, here you go, influencer one.
Just take it and enjoy it.
You just made a 10 million view video, and we're paying you $12,000, but you'll have no idea how you got that money.
They don't give the calculation, nothing. There's
they give like some real generic stuff that's like, I work with these people all the time, right. So we're trying to figure it out right now. And it's impossible to figure it out.
It sounds like Netflix, how they're so secretive about everything they do.
And Facebook, yeah. Instagram, even YouTube is pretty cagey mm-hmm. about it. Once you get mm-hmm. to a certain level on YouTube, they start to become more transparent because they want to make an actual deal with you.
Because they need you.
But right? So that's, to me, is the first hurdle, right? But then Mike and Kevin and I, we've all discussed this before, which is you need to have an open door for these influencers to know that they can come right in and they can get served by SAG. Mm-hmm. Right, by a union. They need to know that the door is open to them. They need to know that they can get health benefits, that they can have Facebook pay that 18% for wages, right? And those kinds of things. Have those things covered. So I guess really the simple answer is once they create consistency, they need to know that the door is open to them to become a union member.
But how do you qualify that? How
do you use any of that, Nevin? Like from your side, if the content's coming to you, and as opposed to Brent, who would be, do you use any of those angles to try and get more money out of them with what they may or may not do with the spot?
I mean, every single situation is different. You know, every commercial, it's all a different animal every time. So, you know, if they come to us and you know, when we're the production side, we're not really so concerned about the ad placement. You know, unless they're like, hey, we need an influencer for this spot. We need them to do this XYZ thing on camera. Then, you know, usually it's a list of people that we have to approach, or, you know, see what you can get, or, you know, it that becomes like a you know,
it's a little too nebulous, too
enigmatic. Yeah, casting production thing. I mean, when it comes to the what they're going to pay, you know, for the ad placement, that's really not the department that I would really be in.
Right.
But,
You know, can't use it as a tool in a way to try and get more money to get something better for your spot at that moment.
Really? I mean, I guess there could be a unique situation where I'm like, well, look, she's got 25 million followers. I mean, you know, these are some serious followers there. Can we up the ante here? You know, like can we make this a higher production value and get something really cool?
Right.
I could possibly use that as a bargaining chip. But, you know, when you're talking about SAG, having an open door for these, you know, what is the qualification? That's a conversation that SAG has to have, and the influencer has to be a conversation about that. Is it the amount of followers? You know, is it the amount of money they bring in? What is it?
It's got to start somewhere, right?
The conversation
gotta
has to start somewhere.
Got to have that conversation.
And then, you know,
sooner than later,
but then you've
happen.
Got also things like, you know, just to play devil's advocate, you know, so you can go and buy these random, you know, followers, and someone could, you know, drop a few hundred grand and buy 10 million followers. I don't know. I'm not throwing numbers out there. Right. But, you know, you can buy followers these days, mm-hmm. whether or not they stick or not over the long term. But, you know, someone could buy followers, get into the door in SAG, and then now I'm in SAG. And, oh, whoops, half them fell. But, hey, I'm in SAG now. Let me negotiate this contract.
Right.
Hi, it's Jack Levy. As an awarded audio producer who's contributed to some of the finest feature films, television shows, video games, and records produced, I've been inundated with requests by peers and major studios alike to produce and manage podcast production, and I'd be delighted to do the same for you. Have an idea for a podcast and don't know where to start or who to call? Look no further. Have a scripted podcast, investigative or documentary, interview show, solo cast, game show, talk show, or literally any other project? Give me a call at 818-233-0640. That's 818-233-0640, or email me at jack@podcastsage.com. We have world-class studios here in Culver City and can work remote, on location, literally anywhere, and have the broadband experience to help with everything from concept development to recording and editing, staffing and writers, and of course, music. Call me at 818-233-0640 or shoot me an email at jack@podcastsage.com. Mention Union Working and get a 10% discount. Hell, I'll make it 15. And now, back to Union Working.
I mean, the truth is I stopped really being an actor full time because I was getting less and less commercial auditions, and that's how I made my money for 20 years. And I saw the writing on the wall, and I saw it's fine. I'm happy to say that it's going to influencers and it's going to a new group of artists. Part of that money that was going to
I'm not happy to say that
television commercials.
I want my commercial work back.
Yeah. You know, it's just the pie has gotten chunked up more, and that's really nobody's fault. That's just innovation, right? I mean, that's all that is. But now, how do you help that innovation? How do you help a great union like SAG get more of that, get that pie, get that money back into our union, and keep those people safe? They're out there. They're getting flogged.
Yeah.
Well, can I?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Can I ask you a question, Brent? So, do you think that the whole influencer thing right now is just a very hot fad? Do you think it might normalize in a couple of years to where, okay, the actors who are traditional actors who used to do a ton, like myself, I used to do a ton of commercials. I mean, multiple nationals per year, that kind of thing, as an actor, and it kind of dried up these past few years. I think a lot of it's going to digital and influencers. Is that going to normalize out at any point, or is it, you think it's just all going that way? And you know, what did the traditional actors, non-influencing actors, do?
Well, it has to solidify in some way, right? I mean, I remember when YouTube came out and they said, like, we're never going to have commercials on anything. It's the democracy of content. La, la, la. And it was like, wait, now you're a cable station?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it will consolidate in some way. I think the consolidation, like I said, is going to be a guy like Dude Dad. He's got a million followers. He's one of the best DIY parenting influencers out there today in the country. And he's going to have his own like comedy content and like building show. And then he's going to find other people like him and he's going to grab them instead of, you know, House Hunters, or, you know, instead of the Food Network or whatever. It's going to consolidate under him. Because why do I need to go to that station that's arbitrarily going to tell me what's good when I know this influencer is already serving my needs from a content standpoint, and he's going to tell me what's good, and I'm going to believe him more because I already believe him. He's a him. He's an individual who I already believe. So I see it kind of ballooning that way in the future. And, I mean, it's already, like I said, Kevin Hart's a great example of someone who's way high up. Jordan Peele's going to do that. You know, there are people. I mean, Funny or Die was that, right? Will Ferrell and Adam McKay were that.
Yep. Yeah. I had a question because we're talking about it's the Wild West. And I think anytime there's something new happening in our industry, what we're going up against is producers or management or whoever you want to call it. They're always like, we don't know. They always play dumb of like, it's digital. It's new. It's like the internet's
Dude,
been around for
new
like
20
30
years.
Ago.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, the new media thing is absurd.
So there's that. But I think another thing on top of that, that is this thing that we're battling against is the use of the term like, it's disposable. It's disposable advertising. It's disposable content. And it's this less than content, which means it's not worth anything. but they're spending billions of dollars on this supposed at its disposal. It'll be up for 4 weeks on blah, blah, blah. And I feel like that's a double-edged sword we're dealing with. Besides, oh, it's the internet's still new. It's not. It's disposable. It's still advertising. You're using influencers with tens of millions of followers and all this stuff. It's still advertising. It still should be paid accordingly. But have you guys found that when you're trying to ask for more money or anything, are you coming up against that where it's like, oh, it's just this little thing?
Well, that's
just
one. It's just transparency.
It's just one part of our, you know, advertising budget.
I mean, from a production standpoint, when you make these, you know, just for digital, you know, commercials, they do. It's always less. I mean, I'm not going to name the specific brands that I worked on in this one commercial, but it was a very large brand working in conjunction with another very well-known, established, large brand. And it was this... the commercials were amazing. They were really cool. But they were like, oh, well, it's just for digital. So, you know, blah, blah, blah. We can't this, we can't that. And I was like, you know, exactly the point you just made. Like, so what? It's not like it's 1998 and we're trying to figure out how to get this, you know, animated GIF onto someone's whatever. It's 2000, we shot this last year, so 2019. Like, this is a legit commercial. This deserves a legit budget.
I'm going to name names. It was Fuddruckers. Those sons of bitches. Build your own hamburger. Get out of here.
Well, I think also what they've done a nice job of doing is creating the sort of firewall. So we know in the influencer world, as soon as a PR company is contacting you, we know it's the bottom of the barrel. They have no money. Okay. So they do it like, if it's a PR company, they have the least amount of money. If it's a marketing firm, a third party marketing firm, they have a little more money. If it's the actual client, they have the most money.
Okay.
But they'll never come to an influencer unless it's Kim Kardashian or, you know, Ariana Grande,
Rock.
Right?
Yeah.
The Rock or somebody who's really got, you know, really, really big influence. And also they'll put a whole production team behind it. But for the middle class influencer who's making good money still, you know, that PR firm is just like, they'll just play games with you the whole time. So it's like, oh, I got $10,000 for the whole year. You know, that's all I got. And, you know, and it's not true. I mean, it is, it's kind of true, I guess, in a way.
Well, but you get some laundry detergent and a case of black beans and they're going to, you know, send something else to your house. So that's great.
And it's tough. And I, you know, because I've been in the business for so long, when I work with these influencers and I mentor them, and even working at Life of Dad, was consistently going, oh, just say $100,000. I didn't even care what it was. Like, just say $100,000. Just start there.
Yeah.
Because, like, who cares? Like, they're going to whittle you down to $2,500 anyway. So start at 100K. They need you. They need your audience. But here's the other thing that I wanted to say on top of what Nevin said is... The hard part for the client right now is that the other part of these, we're talking digital, right? So we're talking YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. They are digital. They own it. There's really nowhere else to go, right? The little bit of TikTok, a little bit of WhatsApp, whatever. Mm-hmm. But what they do to the influencer, as soon as you have to make that legally binding handshake on a piece of content, that you are a branded piece of content, that you were contacted by a client and you are now making a branded piece of content, and you make that handshake, guess what Facebook does to that video? Just suppresses the shit out of it.
Really?
Yeah, because they don't want you going around them to make a commercial, right? They're trying to put commercials in your content.
Right.
So they don't want you making your own brand deals. And they tell you straight
scandalous.
Up, suppresses the video.
It's like the YouTube video stuff, right?
Yeah,
where
exactly.
Like Facebook's like, oh, it's a YouTube video? They're owned by Google?
Yeah, bye-bye.
No. Yeah, and so nobody sees it. Yeah.
I mean, go back to like the 60s and 70s and imagine, you know, P&G looking at, you know, Johnson & Johnson and go, yeah, we're just going to make that commercial disappear from your television.
Yeah.
Right now, in the middle of Walter Cronkite.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, that's literally going to happen
as we speak. What had happened probably 5-6 years ago when I was at Awesomeness TV was you had this bubble for the middle class influencer, people who had a few hundred thousand followers, and they were charging 15, 20, 25K to do a little product placement or a little spot for their client.
Hey,
right?
I
love this, guys. Yeah, yeah. What's up? I love this. And then the videos were getting a quarter of the views that their regular weekly videos were getting. And so the client pulled back on all that money. So So I don't know where it went, but they pulled back on it. And so the middle class influencer has now taken a big hit. Because
shocking.
They've, I know, and it makes sense. Again, they got to go where the eyeballs are, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have to keep chasing the eyeballs. And so if Facebook's going to go, well, I'm going to suppress that video, then they're going to go, well, guess what? I'm paying you $20,000 and I'm getting a quarter of the amount of views that you normally get. So shit, I can't pay you 20. Sorry, can I swear?
Yeah, sure.
I can't pay you $20,000. I can only pay you $5,000 now. And so it's a game. It's a game that's being played there too.
All right. So I got a big curveball. Now, this can be a short thing, and Mike, for sure, comment on this, but I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball. Mm-hmm. And if this is just a metaphor, and this is not about throwing anyone under the bus, but I want to have an honest perspective. If you were to metaphorically give me an answer as to when you grapple with all that we've just discussed for the last half hour in terms of technology, algorithms, suppression, where we're at, low-budget digital contracts, how far behind, since both of you guys have done a ton of on-camera commercials as actors, how far behind is SAG-AFTRA technology-wise in both ways, in terms of being able to service its members, but also its engagement with the agencies and with the companies that we deal with that hire us? Metaphorically, what are we grappling with?
If we're in the electric car phase and you know, if we're, you know, metaphorically, society's there, SAG is like horse and buggy, like it's ridiculous.
Okay, so Brent's laughing and Mike just fell off the couch. We have other people in the room who
there was
actually,
a notable gasp.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to perform CPR on Jim and Nancy over there.
I'm laughing that there's a buggy involved.
Yeah, right.
Even.
There may
I thought
not
it was
be
just
a buggy,
the horse,
just horses, maybe pre-horse era. I'm not
but
sure.
That's important to note. That's you guys work these deals on a daily basis. So to hear that, it kind of, you know, backs up what a lot of people think. And
just look at how SAG has evolved the contracts from when digital really started making, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when it's like, this is a thing, you know, this is here to stay.
Yeah.
And they basically have done nothing. The last contract was the only really major step forward to like try to do something with the buyouts. But even then it's like, I mean, it needs to be a totally reconfigured. Like,
he's got a horse and buggy. Where are you at? Like, are you like maybe not even the horse?
No. like the wheel? No, it's not. And the reason I have a different outlook on it is because I think everyone except Silicon Valley was shocked by how quickly social media took off. And I mm-hmm. think that not only was SAG caught with their pants down, but I think all of the advertising industry was caught with their pants
down. Sure, no
doubt. Advertising agencies are flailing right now. You want to mm-hmm. walk on the other side? They are flailing.
Yeah.
There are production companies now that are flailing.
Yep.
Everyone is trying to keep the art on the walls, and it's not easy right now.
But what does it come down to? It's because of where is that money being funneled? And that's why they're flailing. Because back in the day, their minds are still on that model that's 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, that where it's like these massive commercials and all these huge budgets,
right.
And everyone takes a little piece of that pie and bam, we're all happy, let's move on to the next one. And that's just not how it is now.
He's right. It's like you're walking down a 26-lane highway right now.
Right.
And there's a million off-ramps. There's just a million places to spend your money. This is why I would say they're about 15 years behind. And essentially, what I think SAG could start with a couple of things. I think the first thing is to start having conversations with YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Just start with those three. And then once you get a handle on what it would take to have a contract with Facebook, or what it would potentially take to have or maybe they just shut the door in your face. While you're doing that, you start having conversations with influencers.
Yeah.
I think it's about the people. It's as much as it's about the producers, right? Or Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, who's you know, organizing the content and putting it out there and getting the eyeballs for these people, influencers. it's really about talking to these influencers, having influencer town halls. Hey, here's what you could potentially be earning with us. Here's the safety net you could potentially have. Now, obviously, we've talked about this, the three of us. So, you'd have to have something in place or just have some informational meetings. What would it take for you guys to want healthcare, to want protection, to want a baseline, do you want that kind of stuff? What are you interested in?
Right. I personally think that the conversation with the influencers needs to happen even before you approach
sure.
the big...
I'm fine with that too. I mean,
to get
either way.
A team of those major influencers behind you and then go to them and be like, look, we've got these guys that are really interested in creating a contract with you through us. Then they might be more apt to open those doors.
It's such a... Oh, sorry.
I gotta tell you, Mike, I don't know about these two guests that we have in here, but like, did you show them my cheat notes or something? Because
they're hitting all of your bullet points.
You guys are literally two questions ahead of me of how do we get a young agency director or a production company and an influencer to be willing to understand why they need P&H? And you guys are already discussing this. Mike, what do you want to throw in there?
What were we just talking about? I totally lost my train of thought.
Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah, it's a reoccurring thing that we've had on the podcast and at our meetings and everything. It boils down to starting with one-on-one conversations. We just had this on one of the other podcast recordings of just one-on-one conversations with influencers, with you, whatever, to find out what are the pain points people are feeling.
Healthcare.
Yeah.
Everyone wants healthcare.
Yeah.
Every single influencer I work with is not in the union, and all they talk about is healthcare.
Right.
If they had healthcare, they could quit their regular job and just be influencers full time. If they had healthcare, they could move to the city they want to move to and keep creating their content.
That's
and
incredible.
Buy a house. Like, it's all, yeah. it's and so oddly predicated on healthcare.
It ranges to younger demographics. So the word pension, again, is this weird. It doesn't even make sense to them. They're like, what is a pension?
It makes sense now that I got one. I'm stoked. Right. I can't wait. You can't wait to become 65.
You do. But an influencer is like, what is a pension? They don't even know what it is. But right. healthcare, everyone knows about. And that's maybe like the first carrot to get them inside the door. Like, sure. There it is. Like, healthcare. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Agreed.
If you could have these companies that are giving you 10 grand to hawk their tea or their soda pop or whatever, you could have healthcare, and it's good healthcare. On top of that, 10 grand, it's 18% for pension and health. Like, that would, maybe that's where it starts. I don't know. That's a great idea.
I just want to say this: it's their job. These influencers that I work with, it's not like fun time, happy time at the OK Corral. Like, this is their job.
Yeah.
They work on this stuff. They do it all themselves. They work their asses off on this stuff.
Every week, pumping out content every week.
Great content that they're listening to. They're acting like the performer, the director, the producer, the network. They're doing it all themselves. And there's no safety net at all.
And it's just a free-for-all. And if they're good, on top of that, they're interacting with their audience constantly because that's how you build
that
audience.
They're their
marketing team as well. They're their PR, their marketing firm, all that stuff.
They deserve to be
exactly.
to have a safety net. And SAG is the closest thing to be able to be that safety net
for them. Okay, so that's the last question is, you've identified all of the stuff, all of the things that are in the sausage while we're trying to make it. We've even identified what the challenge may be to why you don't want the sausage more. But here's the last question, because it is with anything. What's going to be the tipping point? What's going to have to happen either to somebody or to a group of people? What's going to be the tipping point where finally some of the best influencers and even some of maybe the agencies or producers go, yeah, that's enough. We've gone a bridge too far. Is there anything, or just until finally someone says stop, that's enough, we quit? What's going to be the tipping point that causes the 25 or 26 year old who's been doing it for 5 or 6 years ago, that's it, I'm done. Unless you do this, I'm not, because that's what it takes for any form of organizing. There has to be a tipping point when you go, screw it, I'm done.
I know what I think. Can I say
go
what
for
I
it.
Think?
Yeah, go for it.
I think it's generational. I think that social media is so new still. It's only like really half a decade, maybe a decade old as far as like really being powerful. And I think those people just have to grow up, have kids, and have real needs. And then they're going to go, oh, shit. I got nothing. I got no safety net. I got no health care. I don't have anything. Well, I got to be a grown up now. Like, I think it's going to be generated. Okay. It's going to be a wave. I see that generation right now. They're in their 20s. They're in their late 20s.
Yep.
They're starting to have kids, and they're going like, oh, man, that'd be weird. I'd love to make this, like, I'd love to make, you know, $5,000, you know, a week. That'd be great. That'd be really nice. And like, oh, you can't? Yeah, it's because you got no safety net, and you don't know how to do this, and no one is helping you make sure that you don't get screwed over. Clients pull out of deals all the time on these guys. There's no safety. Oh, we didn't
there's
do
no
this.
They don't.
There's
kind of
no
thing.
Kill fee. I didn't. Hmm. That's no kill fee. Are you kidding me? They don't even know what that is.
Nevin comes in with a kill fee at the last second.
I think it's generational. Unless we can. And we can speed that up by starting to have that conversation with those influencers now.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, what can I say? That was a great answer. I don't think there's any much I can add to that. From a production side, it would to have more contracts in place would, you know, make that negotiation process just, you know, easier and everything would be smoother. And then instead of going at it and then, you know, what do we, there's so many different ways to, for different influencers. There's so many, I'd say, you know, countless ways that you can create a contract with someone right now, you know, without any kind of template or something to go or a minimum to jump off of, you know, so you could get this influencer for whatever, $50 and this next one for, you know, $50,000 because they are better negotiators. It's so across the spectrum that we're still in that Wild West phase.
Bring us home, Mike.
I just think now that we've talked about like the state of affairs and like what it's going to take to move this, let's aim high. What's in a perfect world, how would this world work? We talked about like maybe simple contracts. There's, you know, a one page contract and there's three different parts of it and it's A, B, and C or whatever. But also on the front of having the union involved, do we have like our own influencer department where, again, an influencer can walk in and they're like welcomed in with warmth and care and they're led through the steps, which I think they would need. It's like all of our actors, we need that by our union to be helped. It's like, you know, actors need to meet halfway and be involved and help themselves out as well. But
sure. In
a perfect world, how would this world, you know?
I have kind of a quasi devil's advocate kind of angle on this because, and this is a question for also Brent to kind of piggyback on what you said. Mm-hmm. In terms of the talent level, I mean, let's look at this, you know, me as a SAG actor, you know, I went to training, had to work my way into it, get those, that SAG voucher, get that SAG gig. And, you know, that took time, that took years, that took experience. And what was the thing that differentiated SAG actors and non-union was that, you know, okay, we've got a higher talent level. These actors are trained. These actors have experience. They've gone through XYZ gamut to get here. You know, now you've got influencers. How are we going to create that qualification that you are now worthy of being a SAG after influencer? Are we going to just let anyone, or is there going to be some kind of process that makes them more elevated above the fray,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's going to be, okay, this is a SAG after influencer. And how do we do that? And that's a conversation that not only do we have to have with influencers, but needs to be a conversation internally within SAG, not only SAG's current members, but obviously the
that's why you got to get influencers in a room.
I think that's easy. I think there's actually a simple answer to this. You start with verifieds. So if you're verified on Facebook, if you're verified on Instagram, that's already the threshold. That's already the threshold that you have to meet, and SAG will help you.
But
now
question:
SAG will
can
give
those
you contracts.
SAG after influencers can they now work on a union television show that's required for acting? Because then I feel like that
sure they're going to
that mixes the what I don't know if they are because
oh, of course they are. They're already showing up everywhere. Awesomeness TV. It has made
well, that's
so many
part of it that
television shows, and they're just using influencer talent. I mean, they created a show for Royal Caribbean Cruises. They're on their fifth or sixth season right now for Royal Caribbean, and it's all influencers. There's no actors
they
at all.
They have a built-in audience pool up, you know.
They put it on YouTube. There's millions of views.
The followers.
And there's not one actor on it. It's just influencers.
Now, when it comes to verifieds, You can't pay to become verified. What does it mean to be verified for people that don't know?
It's a certain amount of followers.
And you're like, you're an established, you're an actor, you're a musician,
yeah.
you're an athlete.
And then you get put in a queue with Instagram and Facebook, and then they verify.
They give you the blue check mark.
Blue check.
Okay.
And then for YouTube, it's the same thing. So YouTube will have, you can't start getting commercials put into your content until you have, I think right now it's 4,000 followers, I think it is. So somewhere, they change it all the time, but okay. Last I checked, it was around 4,000. So let's make that the threshold. Great. Hmm. You have the capability now. Now you're verified, or whatever the capability is for Facebook to allow you to start putting ads in your commercials, in your content. That's the level. Now you can come to SAG and we can create a baseline for you and we can create a safety net for you. And now you can be a part of that. I think that'd be a great place.
I hear you, but I respectfully disagree.
Oh.
I think there should be a next higher. That should be just the first level where they should even think about it. But I think there should be yet another threshold to where you can become a SAG after influencer. And that's just, you know, I think there should be a higher threshold for that.
And we're going to see if we can't find a way to get the horse and buggy up to that threshold and onward. Guys, unbelievable conversation. Very much appreciated. Nevin Milan, Brent Popolizio, and of course, UW, my man, Mike C. Nelson. Always nice. Kevin E. West, that was an outstanding conversation.
Yeah, we should circle back and have this conversation in a little while and see if the ball's rolling any.
Because I don't think we've corralled the Wild West quite yet.
Not yet. I will say this. Both my boys have decided that they want to act, and I just got them agents, and they care more about their YouTube channel than they do about even meeting an agent and the fact that they got an agent. They could care less, and they're stoked about their YouTube channel.
That explains the life of dad. Right? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Be sure to download the next episode and subscribe to the Union Working Podcast on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, on any Alexa-centric platform, or find us at buzzsprout.com and unionworking.com. On behalf of the Union Working Team, we'd like to express our deepest gratitude to Arlene Schuster-Goss, ASG Casting, Justin Radley, and Southpaw Studios for their tremendous support and generosity. If you would like to learn more about our nonpartisan, solution-based grassroots movement and follow us at Union Working as we positively affect the future of our industry and union.
Need music for a podcast, television project, film, audiobook, or any other production need? I suggest you call my friends at Spirit Production Music. You can find them and listen to their music at spiritproductionmusic.com. Representing over 50 music libraries and over 200,000 tracks, Spirit Production Music has all the music you'll need, staff to help, and prices you'll love. Email them through their website or give them a call today at 818-508-2040. That's 818-508-2040. Ask for my buddy Ryan. He'll personally help you find the right music for your project. SpiritProductionMusic.com. Check them out. You'll be thrilled.